Welcome to the Rappers Over 30 podcast, hosted by yours truly, Imp the Great. This is podcast episode number one. Every great dream begins with a dreamer. Always remember, you have within you the strength, the patience, and the passion to reach for the stars, to change the world. Harriet Tubman.
Yeah, this is for the 30 and up. Grown folks that be earning a buck. Gotta tell the kids, hurry it up. Gosh, you won't dirty it up. Come on. My grades from everything I learned from way back in the days. Yeah, peeping how the game goes, same old, underneath that rainbow, and shit on the shango. You got your own thing, know you're feeding family. I'm on my grown thing, player, don't challenge me. I gotta get right, life on the balance beam. Still keep it mackin', no, hold it down naturally. Yeah, this is for the 30 and up. Grown folks that be earning the buck. Gotta tell the kids, hurry it up. Gosh, you won't dirty it up.
You are now listening to the Rappers Over 30 podcast. We support, motivate, and encourage rappers over 30 to stay healthy, relevant, and successful.
Podcasting from a home studio somewhere in Los Angeles County, this is the Rappers Over 30 podcast, and here's your host, Imp the Great.
Welcome, 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 welcome to the very first episode of the Rappers Over 30 podcast. I'm your motivational host, Imp the Great, but you can call me Imp. Our song of the day was 30 and Up by AC Alone. It's available on all digital platforms. That's 30 and Up by AC Alone. Be sure to cop that, and I look forward to interviewing him one day. Today's show is sponsored by FromRapToFilm.com, my exclusive streaming video-on-demand channel, which features documentaries, short films, and the film interviews from my podcast. It's video content you can't get anywhere else for just $19.99 a year. Help me keep bringing you dope shows by subscribing to my streaming video-on-demand channel at FromRapToFilm.com. The Rappers Over 30 podcast is a free audio program, just like talk radio. But you subscribe to it on any smart device and listen to it whenever you like. The podcast is streamed on any podcast app like Spotify, Apple Music, and Google. The easiest way to hear the podcast is to visit my website at rappersover30.com. What's it all about? The Rappers Over 30 podcast is about you and me. It's about passionate artists who do it for love and deserve respect and a check. It's about reigniting the I used to listen to rap music fan and working hard to gain new fans. It's a supportive, motivational community that's concerned about your health and stature in the rap game. Rappers Over 30 is a work in progress that currently features interviews, new rap music, and ongoing discussions about health, fitness, rap music business, and killing Willie Lynch syndrome in the black community. Let me ask y'all some questions. Is old school A, an age, B, a state of mind, C, a sound, or D, none of the above? Who determines a rapper's relevance? A, pop culture, B, his or her fan base, C, social media, or D, none of the above? Rap is a young man's game. True or false? Let's talk about it, y'all. Rap is a young man's game is a conspiracy that falls in line with the Willie Lynch letters. Because rap is a multitude of things that fall under the edutainment category. A younger rapper may be able to dance and have the glow of youth, but the older rapper will be able to deliver messages that the younger rapper can't because of lack of experience and certain wisdoms. Now, I know it's a lot of people in the world who like to make rap purely entertainment and take the educational aspect out of it, but rappers over 30 are not having it. For those of y'all who say rap is a young man's game simply because record labels only want to sign young artists, I say you out of touch with the fact that artists nowadays can mix, master, distribute, and promote their own music via computers and the internet. So who needs a record deal? Secondly, I advise artists to beware of people who try to place their insecurities on you. Distance yourself from the non-believers and associate yourself with communities like Rappers Over 30. If you happen to live with a non-believer, keep your business to yourself. Let their lack of faith add fuel to your fire. Now, what I'm suggesting is very, very hard work. You gotta grind. You gotta be committed. It's hard work, discipline, and the willingness of the possibility of having to reinvent yourself as an artist. Remember, it's art. Don't be scared to paint a different picture. Today on the show, we have an amazing guest. He has a career that spans over 50 years. He's a DJ, record producer, performing artist, club owner, author. He's been on the big screen and featured in several documentaries. He teaches inner city kids. He's a podcast host. He's credited with launching the careers of notable names in hip hop. His proteges include Dr. Dre, Ice Cube, DJ Yella, Eazy-E, Michelle A, DJ Battlecat, Rodney O and Joe Cooley, the LA Dream Team, and Compton's Most Wanted. That's just to name a few. If you're in the entertainment business, a parent, a concerned citizen, a fan of hip-hop history, or someone with diet, fitness, and health concerns, you don't want to miss this episode. During our interview, we discuss health, the music business, discipline, the black community, and Willie Lynch syndrome. So without any further delay, please enjoy my conversation with the godfather of West Coast hip-hop, Alonzo Williams. Thank you so much. We got the godfather here, the godfather of West Coast hip-hop. And I want to say, you know, I've been tuning into some of your lives, some of your YouTube, some of your interviews. And, you know, I've been knowing you for some years, but, man, I didn't know a lot of stuff. Like you, I watched one of your podcasts this morning or one of your interviews, and you was talking about Afro Man. You know, I'm up here in Palmdale, and I didn't know that you had anything at all with Afro Man. Man, you just so tied in. So what's the story with you and Afro Man?
Man, I met Afro Man. I was doing a showcase over on Western and Imperial at this little banquet hall. And he came in. He only had four strings on a six-string guitar. But his lyrics, and he didn't have a real natural. He was wearing a natural wig back then.
Uh-huh.
And he was so serious about what he was doing, man. I dug his vibe because he was so original. Uh-huh. And he had a funky clothes he got now, or the big, you know, the big big afro, nothing like that. But what he was saying, he was talking about entrepreneurism and getting your money. He wasn't saying it in a gangster way. He was just being himself. And I've always been attracted to artists that, you know, kept it original, kept it. Always, you know, was true to themselves, and that's what he did. And he came by the studio, did some tracks for me, and did a couple songs with me. I realized he was one of my albums I did. I got a couple of verses from him. So yeah, you know, he blew up, man. When he blew up, he never forgot about me. You know, he always remembered where he came from, where he got to start from, and I love that about him, man.
Yeah, he's a good dude. You know, I knew him when I came up here. I only had knew him through the song, Because I Got High. But when I met him, I'm like, man, this dude is a funkster. He's a musician. He's a musician. So he's, shout out to Afro Man, you know. So shout out to Afro Man.
The first cast I ever met in the hip hop game that came to me with an instrument in his hand. Most guys, you know, they just got a microphone in their nuts. But he had came with a guitar. He only had four strings, but he came with a guitar.
Mm-hmm. So Lonzo, out the gate, you know, if you see me looking down, or anybody watching see me looking down, I'm just looking at my notes. So out the gate, first and foremost, you know, you are the godfather of West Coast hip hop. All praises due, much respect, much love, you know, because you do every single thing in the world. I mean, you're busy. You're a busy man, and you love your community. Before we get too much into this, I want to know, do you got any products or services or anything that you got that's you know, that you're trying to get out there to the public?
Well, I got a few things I'm doing, man. I have a book out called NWA, Not Without Alonzo, on Amazon and That's doing pretty good. I have a nonprofit also called the Lyrical Revolution, 501c3, lyricalrevolution.org. And as being a grown man who lived through the 90s and the 2000s, all the gangsterism, see this thing still being a major problem in my community kind of bothers me. I got kids, I got grandkids, and Lyrical Revolution is launching a campaign to market peace in the community, and it's called Hood Peace, because Hood Lives Matter. You know, we have Black Lives Matter that works with systemic racism. But for some reason, man, nobody wants to address the issues that we have in our own community. You know, people got excuses for it. Oh, man, this suppression, this oppression, this broke, you know, blah, 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 blah. But you ain't got to be broke not to want to kill somebody. And, you know, as I deal with people, one of my other businesses is I teach podcasting and other forms of social media to ex-offenders that just got home. Cats been in jail 10, 15 years. Never heard of podcasting. And I usually interview them and I ask them all how they got caught up, how'd you get your sentence. And most of the time, man, not all, but most of the time, they tell me something like, man, it was some bullshit. We had a crap game. Somebody stepped on a dollar, told a dollar, and it just went crazy from there. And when you think about a lot of the situations that are escalating into life and death situations, the root problem ain't shit, but a lot of these youngsters never learn to de-escalate a situation and let it go. Or if you get your ass whooped, take the loss. Y'all can be friends tomorrow. And I laugh about this all the time, man, because I got boys that I had fights with in 10th grade, 9th grade, back in junior high school. And we laugh and talk about that shit today, man. But, you know, nobody got a bullet wound. Nobody got a knife cut, a knife scar, or a jail sentence behind this shit. And I just think a lot of these cats, they take themselves too serious, and they take this so-called gangster lifestyles too serious, and they fucking their lives off for no reason, man. So Hood Peace is a marketing campaign that we're starting out of Compton to promote the concept of, hey, man, think about it before you shoot. You know, don't be shooting up the neighborhood because you're mad at one dude. You're mad at one person, but you're shooting everybody on the block because you pissed off. Come on, man. That ain't how it's supposed to go, Doc. And, you know, like I tell people all the time, if we inflict, if the Proud Boys or any of those other Donald Trump supporters was inflicted as much pain in our community as we do, we'd be ready to roll up on everybody. But, you know, for some reason, when it comes to us, we accept it. I don't want to accept it no more.
Okay. Can you repeat those? I got the Hood Piece, but you were saying Lyrical. Is that one organization?
Lyrical Revolution.
Okay, Lyrical Revolution
is the sponsor or the main. This is my main organization. Hood Piece is the marketing campaign that we are launching. It starts off with T-shirts, street signs. It's going to social media. It's going to billboards. It's going to music. It's hopefully going to movies, man. Because we have to understand, man, that we get marketed everything from tennis shoes to alternative lifestyles, but nobody tries to offer us peace or a different way of thinking, man. Mm-hmm. You know, if you ain't a gangster or a hoe these days, you can't make no money. I think that's bullshit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it starts at the family. And I'm going to bring up something that we're going to get back on this, but since you're on that, I'm going to bring up something. I had a conversation with my son the other day, and, you know, because I got on here where I wanted to talk about family. So when we're talking about these kids out in the street shooting and killing everything, then we got to go back into the home. So once you get in the home, you got mama, you got daddy. One thing I didn't know was I kind of always thought that the parent, the father, was the more one who was going to dish out the discipline. But I talked to my girl, and she let me know that, you know, when she was coming up, her mother was going to whip her one time, and pops jumped up and was like, nah, don't you never do nothing like that. Then I talked to my niece yesterday, and, you know, she was telling me that, you know, in her relationship, the husband, you know, stopped her from disciplining. So sometimes either or discipline. But the point I wanted to make, you know, my son, he had brought up this to me. And then part of this, you know, what we're doing is rappers over 30 and we're trying to better the community. So part of this is having some real serious discussions. So this is a personal thing. My son told me, maybe we had a conversation about a week ago. And he told me I emotionally damaged him some in some kind of way with that. And I said, what are you talking about? And he said, you know, because he said, because you abuse me or whatever. I'm like, abuse you? What are you? I say, can you name? I said, I probably can count on my hand, on one hand, the times I disciplined you, you know, as far as giving him a spanking or something. And I said, well, tell me one time. He said, well, Dad, one time you and Mama was upstairs. You was on your computer. You was on your phone. And you was, and I kept bothering you. He said, I bothered you 3 or 4 times. You kept telling me to stop, you know. And he said, finally, you got up. You took your belt off. And you spanked me. You popped me on my behind 3 times. And that was it. And I say, you don't have no idea what I went through with my dad. And he told me I need to go to therapy for that because you're violent and you don't realize that you've been abused and this, that, and the other. So part of what we're dealing with is a lot of parents, the discipline kind of went out the window because I think it got to a point where they came up with a law or something where the kids can call the police on their parents. And then you might have, like I said, you know, one of the parents might not believe in discipline. But just based on that story, what do you think about that? And what do you think about discipline in a household? Were you disciplined? Did you dish out a little discipline? And just that whole thing, because I think that's a big part of why we're seeing a lot of these kids out in the street shooting and killing and doing things.
I got my ass beat and I beat ass. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that was probably one of the biggest, well, it wasn't a mistake because it was part of the plan, okay? I remember growing up, my uncle left my auntie, and she had 6 kids. The neighbor stepped up, my dad stepped up, and if she had to, she put hands on one of them six kids, if she had to. She never had to bail nobody out of jail. She never had nobody get shot. But again, man, you know, we have to understand that we as people get played all the time by the system. They try to tell us to raise our kids a certain way, and we know what works for our kids. Now, mm-hmm. And granted, some people go overboard, but for the most part, I got my ass whipped when I was a young man. I got my ass whipped at school. And I was coming up, they still got to spank you, swat you at school. Yeah. Okay? Mm-hmm. And the last thing you want to do was get swatted at school because you got your ass beat at home for getting swatted at school. Mm-hmm. Okay? And you know you was in a situation that you wasn't going to win, so it gave you a different mindset. But when the system is more focused on giving you either pills or a jail sentence or a record for doing something, they take away certain elements that will allow that to be more prevalent. You know, I have a friend of mine, he works for the community organization on about mental health. And, you know, these kids are being fed sugar in the morning, then they get written because they can't sit their ass down, okay? Mm-hmm. You know, it's the same thing when I played sports as a kid. You know, it was $20 to play baseball. And if you didn't take first, second, or third, you didn't get a trophy. You got a hot dog and some punch, okay? Mm-hmm. Well, nowadays, it's $400 to play baseball, and everybody get a trophy. Everybody get to keep a uniform. And they've been taught in a different manner that nobody has really had a chance to get a grip on and make the adjustment so that the kids don't grow up to be disrespectful. I mean, they're so worried about the kids being, verbally abused? Sit your ass down as verbally abusing somebody? I don't think so. But in the meantime, you know, the kids ain't scared of nobody. And, you know, they putting bullets in folks. They running crazy. But like I said before, I don't have a problem in my house.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I got two sons, 32. I put hands on them when they stepped out of line. And they love me for it right to this day. My 18-year-old son, I had put hands on him. And within reason. My daughters, not one of my daughters have I ever had to spank. Not because I wouldn't, because I just never had to. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes girls learn in different ways, you know. So, you know, as a dad with 5 kids, My daughters saw how I handled my sons, and they learned very well. This dude don't play. I might want to readjust my attitude. I never got cussed out. I ain't had anybody on the pole, nothing like that. So I think I did a pretty good job. But, you know, it's just that the system has made us think that we can't hit our kids. Anytime you touch your kids or you hit your kids, it's abuse. Meanwhile, our kids are being exposed to music and alternative lifestyles that are detrimental to their progress. I mean, hip-hop has been weaponized against our kids, and nobody says anything about the fact that most of the music today is promoting homicide, genocide, or suicide. That ain't a factor. But if you was talking about killing puppies, they'd have a fit. If you was talking about killing some gay people, they'd have a fit. But as long as you're killing black people, it's okay. So that's the abuse right there, that they allow that to be inundated into our kids' heads without no regulation. And, you know, your kids don't hear it, but mine do.
Mm-hmm. What they've done is they've took the discipline out the house, out of the home, and then they'll make it more extreme than what it is. If you discipline or you spank, they're going to make it he abused. You know, but the thing is, like I told my son, I say, when a man or a woman disciplines their child, what they're doing is they're trying to teach you something so you don't go out in the world with that BS and get yourself killed or thrown in jail. So when I discipline them, basically you should learn from this that, you know, when somebody tell you to chill, you need to chill. The other side of the coin was, you know, I told them, I had actually told them, I said, you know, honestly, your mother should have intervened. Because I'm sitting there doing something on a computer, I'm working and I'm on the phone, and she's sitting right there, okay, and she didn't intervene. You know, and I love her, but I'm just putting it out here. These are things that happen in the house. So years later, I got a similar situation. My grandson, he's about, I think at that time, he might have been about 4 years old. He's determined, I'm on a computer working, he's determined he's going to hit me in my face. So he's going to shoot. Yeah, he's throwing shoes, hangers at my face. It got to be my face. He's throwing shoes, hangers, all kind of stuff at me. And his grandmama's sitting right there. So finally, when I got up and disciplined him, which I just hold him down, say, ah, like growled. I'm having fun with him, growled on his stomach, like, ah, 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 ah. And he starts crying, and she had a fit. You know, so things like this happen. Here's another story. I'm in the movies one time, Magic Johnson Theater down there off of Crenshaw. And my kids was little, and you know, me and my wife, I was married at the time. And the family behind me, it's a mother with about three kids. They keep kicking out chairs. And so I turned around and told the lady several times, you know, your kids keep kicking on my chair. Oh, my kids ain't doing anything. Finally, they start chewing up popcorn and spitting that on us. So I turned around and watched the whole, you know, I couldn't watch the movie. I just watched them the whole rest of the movie. But in my head, I was thinking, if they do it again, I'm kicking the whole family butt. You know what I'm saying? So I told my son that, and he once again, see, Dad, you need therapy. But I think, I don't know, where are we going wrong where, you know, number one, a parent will see their child acting up, and they're not going to intervene. You know, they're just not going to intervene. Where are we losing it at now? How does that happen?
Man, I think it goes back to the fact that the village is lost. You know, used to be a time, if you did something, you know, you did it down the street. By the time you got home, your mama knew it. People had popped upside your head a couple times when you got home, and your mama reinforced that. Nowadays, kids do something, and the parents get kids do something in school, and the parents go defend the kids. You know, some parents want to be the kid's friend more than they want to be their parents. You want to be liked more than you want to be respected. Mm-hmm. And these kids grow so fast, especially these boys. You at home, your mama 5'2", all of a sudden your son is 14, he's 6'1", 175 pounds. He think he run the house. Mm-hmm. He been getting away with it because he's been so cute all this time. Now he got some homies want to come by the house and do all kind of shit. No, man. I mean, when you forget that sometimes you're a kid's parents and you don't want to go there. You don't want to be the disciplinarian or have them mad at you. Man, sit your ass down. They'll get over it. Okay, but a lot of parents, especially if your kid has never heard the term, never heard the phrase, wait till your daddy get home. A lot of kids have never heard that, man.
He's had a cartoon. Remember the cartoon? Wait till your daddy get.
A lot of kids have never heard that phrase. Wait till your daddy get home, man.
Well, so,
you've been a mom all this time and you working hard or whatever the case may be. I'm not making no excuses, but you know, sometimes you just don't have the energy to do that. Or the kid is, you might have more than one kid and they working your nerves. Okay. But for the most part, man, I think a lot of parents, I've seen it. You got these new hover moms where they go to practice with the kid and stay all day long. And the coach say something to the kid. The kid don't, mama don't like, she on the field talking to the coach, hands and, you know, talking to the kid. Buddy of mine, he coached football, a little league football, like 10, 12 years, man. He said, I can't do it no more. I said, what's wrong? He said, the kids, too. Said, the kids, ain't the kids, ain't the problem. It's the mamas. It's the parents. Mm-hmm. The parents are out of control, too. Mm-hmm. You got parents. I saw a letter on Facebook, and I have talked to people who own daycare centers. And she says, the letter was the same thing Letty told me, that she had to give the parents a letter and tell them, she's a mandatory reporter, if the kids come to school abused, or in this case, something like marijuana, she has to report you. I don't want to do that, but if you don't have enough sense to realize your kid can't be around marijuana, then you might not need your kids. So why we got to even make that statement? Why would that be necessary? You should think as a grown person that you can't have your kids around certain things. The same thing. When you got, I take my son to school every morning, man, from Culver City, from my house, from Gardena to Culver City every morning for 13 years. And I'd be at the light sometime, man, depending on what city I'm at, and you got parents, car full of kids, bumping gangster rap, okay? Pops, the moms are singing the lyrics, you know, fucking, you know, shooting, blah, blah, blah. The kids in the back seat, they jamming too, but... You don't, you know, certain things kids shouldn't be exposed to. And that's one of the things that sometimes people forget, they still kids, man. And, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes you got to be an adult and let them be their kid, be kids.
Mm-hmm. Well, I personally think that, you know, and you know, sometimes as a black person, you could get, I guess the word is ostracized or, you know, your community, I think you, something wrong with you or something. But I think we're our own worst enemy. And then I come from a background, and I think a lot of people, I'm 57, but I think a lot of people my age, especially men, their parents probably, their father was probably a military guy, you know? So we speak kind of stern and firm. And I've had, when my kids was coming up, I've had my son and my nephew tell me, hey, can you ask mama to tell me? Because when you tell me, it sounds like it's a demand or a command. So
it is.
Yeah, you know, so... You know, and so they don't want to be told nothing. But if you got someone, I guess this goes back to values, you know. So me and my niece was talking, and like I said, I think, you know, I had asked the other day, I said, have anybody ever asked you for marital advice? You know, I say, because people had asked me before, they told me they looked up to me because, you know, I've always been old school with this rap thing, you know, and they say, well, yeah, we remember you used to come to the Good Life and you'd have your little kids with you and everything. So they'd ask me marital advice. So now I've gotten wiser. And I think now I would tell them values, you know, not only values, but and when I could say values, because you might have somebody, you're getting married and this parent believes in discipline, this parent don't. So I think you got to get a list of them values and find out where you guys bump heads at and find a middle ground. That way, when you're dealing with your child, you both are on the same accord, you know? Sure. So I don't know. I kind of lost my train of thought there. But yeah, that's one thing we deal with. Then let's talk about mental health, you know? So you had mentioned, I saw you on another interview and you guys was talking about mental health. So we could talk about the drugs. Is it drug induced? Did the crack, where does the crack era, you know, play in the, you know, because a lot of these kids, their parents could have been on crack, you know? So well, where does that play a role at in the mentality of the children today?
In some cases, that is the problem. Some kids were, you know, born during the crack era and they have emotional and mental issues. A lot of what we see, man, here's the crazy part. A lot of what we see, it's the kids' diets, man. You know, you can't give a kid sugar smack, sugar flakes, and greater Gatorade and send him to school and expect him to sit their little asses down. Okay. Mm-hmm. If you wanna get back at your mama and daddy, send the grandkids home with some sugar in their system, about 9 o'clock. They're not going to bed. You give some kids sugar. Sugar's like cocaine to kids, man. And it's the same thing. In almost every cereal for kids is heavily induced with sugar. And kids go to school, especially little boys, and they bouncing off the wall because they got a fresh dose of sugar. Sugar is a natural stimulant. But instead of telling them changing his diet, give him something different to eat, you want to give him a drug to offset the sugar high. And that don't do no good because now you got to give him another drug to offset the drug you gave him for the sugar high. And by the time this kid has been got to high school, he's been on dope every day of the week. And then you got organizations, if they're in foster care, you get more money if they're on drugs. So if you don't care about the kid, you got the kid on drugs just on the strength so you can get an extra check. So you got all kind of games being played with these kids, man. Then you wonder why a lot of them do what they're doing out in the streets because these kids is coming down. They're going through withdrawal shit.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lonzo, you know, once again, I'm going to thank you. We're going to continue, but I just want to shout out to let the people know this is the Rappers Over 30 podcast. And part of what we're doing is to, you know, motivate the rappers to keep going because I believe, you know, the old school guys, they got the wisdom, they got the knowledge. So if you're trying to tell them to shut up, you're actually harming our community. So back to what you were saying with the sugar, you know, they have a video. I don't know if you saw it on YouTube, but they take every like a full meal from the day, from your breakfast to your lunch to your dinner, and they just start taking the gram. You know, they'll look at how much sugar is in it. And by the end of the day, they got a plate this high full of sugar that you done had throughout the day. Not only that, you know, I kind of get on, I just love my grandkids so much. But when I go up there, I see them always with this goddamn, what is some thing? Hot Pockets. And you read it and it's chemical. Everything is this many, is 50 ingredients in it. And maybe three of them, you know what the hell it is. So once again, yeah, you're giving them all this bad stuff. So the thing is with some of this stuff we're talking about, it's an uphill battle. But I think the thing is, because they say when people have an alcohol or drug addiction, the first step is admitting you have a problem. So when we're talking about things like just even the feeding your kids this junk, or, you know, when you see your kid going down the wrong way, if he's doing something, check his little ass or discipline. How do you get people to maybe agree with this? You know, we're not necessarily saying agree. They should agree. But how can you convince them and point out to them, look, man, this is how this community can be healthier and this is how this community can be safer?
Well, you know, you have to come in. You almost have to come in with a different kind of program food-wise, first of all. You almost got to talk down on McDonald's and Jack in the Box and all the places that we got. And if you live in the hood, that's all we got. Everything we got has been deep fried, and like my boy called it mystery meat. You know, they were talking about McDonald's. Ain't but so many cows in the world, and these motherfuckers using a bunch of them. Mm-hmm. And what else they got? What else they got in here that ain't cows? Okay, mm-hmm. they ain't beef. So you got all kinds of situations. You got KFC. They had to change their name from Kentucky Fried Chicken to KFC. Because the chicken they got ain't really... You ever seen some of them shit, them chickens? Mm-hmm. They had some bad days. Mm-hmm. So you got genetically modified organisms that people are consuming under the illusion of being food. You got all these fillers and stretchers and cuts, whatever the case may be. You got enough of the original ingredient in there to say it is what it is, but you got some more stuff in there to make the money, okay? And when you got a little bit of money, the dollar menu look real good, but you can't do a whole lot. You can't buy no gas for a dollar, so how you gonna buy a meal for a dollar, okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, think about what you're saying. In some cases, the gas is $3 a gallon, $3-$4 a gallon in some places, but you're gonna give me two all-beef patties, two of them for $5? Come on, man. Mm-hmm. There's some filler in there someplace, and I don't know what the filler is. Mm-hmm. And that's the part that people need to be concerned about.
Okay, I had another talk. I'm trying to remember who I was talking to, but they was talking about, I think the word you used was the demasculation of men. So once again, you know what I'm saying? If when we look at what's going on out here, and it ain't no big homies, it ain't no father figures, somebody to check these people or to do something, then where are we going? I mean, can a man be a man nowadays, or is you too much bass? You're too aggressive. You're too violent. You know, everything you can bump someone nowadays. Oh, I was assaulted. You see what I'm saying? So what's going on with that?
Who are you too aggressive for, though? I mean, you know, everybody, you know, they know black people. I get accused of being aggressive because I'm very passionate when I speak. So, man, you mad at not? I'm mad about that. I speak with a lot of passion because if I feel it, I want you to feel it. Okay. Mm-hmm. And for some people, that can be intimidating. That can be very intimidating. And you so busy, you want me to stop being me so you can feel comfortable being you. Don't make no sense. Maybe we shouldn't communicate. And that's the same problem a lot of brothers have with the police. You know, a lot of brothers talk with their hands. Hey, man, what'd I do? He made it move with his hands. Mm-hmm. Keys or his watch is not a gun. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, we have different ways of doing what we do. We have a different kind of swag, okay? And our swag comes out in our vocals. It comes out in our voices. Comes out in the way we dress. Comes out in the way we dance. We just have a different kind of swag. And that swag is what makes us. And some people see that swag as being intimidating. And if you're a male, I mean, I remember one day I'm in a Pollo Loco. I'm sitting there kicking it. And a cop walked over. He was sitting at another table. And I said, hey, man, how do you... And he was a big cop. Got to be at least about 300 pounds. I said, man, look, it. I don't mean to be... You know, because I asked a motherfucker. I don't give a damn. Man, look, dude, you're a pretty big dude, okay? How do you catch these youngsters if they take off running? First of all, he said the average one, he can't run that fast. He's trying to hold his pants up. Okay? Mm-hmm. He said, now, and here I am. I'm 5'11", 5'11", 3/4". At that time, I might have been 180 pounds. He said, a big guy like you. And I'm like, huh? And he figured, he saw me as being a big guy. I don't see myself as being a big guy. I see myself being an average size guy, but for an African American guy, I'm average size. Mm-hmm. If you, to me, a big guy, 6'3", 6'4", 250, 260. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a big dude. Okay. That he's gonna make you think twice before you put hands on him. Okay. But when people see you and they perceive you because you're taller than them or you have a different kind of swag, your body type is different. As being big or intimidating or whatever the case may be, they respond to you differently, man. Mm-hmm. And that could be that, you know, and you know, I'm not gonna wear no bows, no dresses to make somebody feel comfortable of being around me. Okay, you know, you be around me enough, you're gonna get used to me, like anything else. Okay, and I think that's the big problem. We don't interact with other folks, other folks don't interact with us enough. To make a real assessment of what, how to deal with black folks. You know, you got these TV versions, everybody's a hoe, everybody's a gangster. But, you know, nah, we some pretty chill dudes, man. You just that, you know, we don't chill the same way you do.
You know what I think sometimes, you know, once again, I'm old school, rappersover30.com. And I think sometimes, you know, when I was coming up, you probably can remember some of this, Kojak, yeah. Mannix. Y5O, Beretta, all these cops was kicking ass, right? Right. I be saying, like, where are these cops at? When is the last time you heard a cop when, you know, from you used to see this on TV, the cop goes somewhere and kick three people ass and handcuff them and take them to jail. That was all a fantasy? That never really existed or what?
You know what?
Because they always shooting and killing.
Well, you know what? You got to understand also, look at the large number of the, especially the sheriffs, they're small dudes, man. Hmm. Look at the sheriffs when they drop the weight limit and the height limit in the sheriff department. You got a lot of small dudes, man. You got a lot of small women. I mean, you know, no disrespect to nobody, but it is what it is. And I'm relatively 6 feet tall, and you got a cop 5'6", 140 pounds. He look at me like. And he got to talk to me like he crazy. So he'll think, so I'll think he's gonna do something to me. All he's gonna do is piss me off, okay? Mm-hmm. But because he got the radio, the gun, the badge, the billy club, and the backup, I got to submit to this bullshit. Mm-hmm. When if you, hey man, look, you ran the red light, I'm gonna give you a ticket, okay? I ain't got to go through your car. I don't have to upsell this case, this situation to get a case. I'm gonna give you this ticket. I'll see you in court. But you know, it becomes a macho thing with a lot of these guys, and that's the part that's what's toxic is the fact that a lot of these cops, you know, think they got in badge, they got the right to the backup.
You know, my father told me when I was a kid, and you know, this a long time ago, he said these are some punk ass cops. He said, because that basically what you're saying, they're hiring people that physically aren't equipped to handle something. And what my father analogy was, he said, over in Europe, you have to be 6'5", you have to weigh so much. And he said, they didn't even carry guns. He said, they carry a big ass billy club.
Yeah.
So, you know, so that's the thing. And I guess if you're doing that, then number one, you are going to be more humble and you are going to de-escalate the situation as opposed to knowing I got this gun, I got this taser, I got a whole military that's going to come and back me up if I'm on that bullshit, you know? Right. So, excuse my language, but...
They're going to back up my bullshit, okay? So, you know, it's really disheartening to be in that situation, man, because, you know, like I tell anybody, man, look, so the hardest time in a black man's life is when that light come on your ass. Like, that light gets hot behind your head and you don't know how to react because you don't know what's on his mind. Mm-hmm. Okay, he don't know what's on your mind, and you trying to, you know, especially if he comes to the door, come to your window with his gun out.
Yeah, okay? Yeah.
Now you nervous as shit. So you want me to be calm? You got your gun out. I ain't done nothing. I don't know what's on your mind, but I got to act like I'm calm and collective. Well, you already showing me that you're already scared. That don't make sense, man. How do you feel for your life if you got all the weapons? And I'm just empty handed cat. How are you feeling in fear of your life and you got all the weapons? That's some punk shit.
I watched another video with you, and this I'm gonna lead into this with you and Fred Shaw of the he's the president of the NAACP Inglewood South Bay chapter. So how can we as men and we as people, and I'm gonna say this for the record, like I say, Lonzo is the godfather of West Coast hip hop, and he loves the community, and it's been shown through his actions. And not only that, like I said, I've been learning so much more about you from watching you. So with you being tied in with the NAACP, and we're talking right now about maybe some changes that could possibly or should possibly happen where things could be better with the police and the black community. So how does the NAACP falls in line with that? And how can the listeners that's tuned in, you know, get involved with the NAACP?
Well, you know what? The first thing we have to understand is it's good to belong to some kind of organizations. Now, what happens is if we out here, we 13% of the population in America, but we are divided like nobody else, okay, as people. We divided in our religion, our complexion. Willie Lynch is in full effect when it comes to black folks. Full effect. We need to belong to something on a collective, because one thing we all share, we all have in common, is we do have that melanin, okay? And if that is going to be our common denominator, we need to belong to something so we can move as a unit to get things done. We moved in November as a unit to get Trump out of office. People were splintering off, you know, people, hey, man, I can't stand him. I can't stand Biden. He did this in 94, blah, 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 blah. But like I tell them, you weren't there in 94. Okay, I remember 94 very well. I was a grown-ass man in 94. And I remember a lot of people were very thankful they signed their crime bill, black folks, because we was the one in the hoods suffering from the insanity that was in the community. So I would say join organizations, man, and it's power in numbers. Understand this. If you get one ant on you, you're going to smash it and keep on pushing. But let a whole bunch of ants get on your ass, okay? You're going to think about some whole other things, okay? One drop of water don't do nothing, but enough water will get you a flood or a tsunami. So you can't be thinking as an individual. You have to think in a group, and that's why we as a people, I believe, are kind of behind everybody else, man, because Asians move in a group, Latinos move in a group. Yeah, they got someone don't like each other, but they put their differences aside long enough to get the money, to get the business handled. Okay, mm-hmm. They might not live in the same community. I don't see Japanese and Koreans live in the same community, but they will go get their money. Okay, While the Marlins and Mexicans, or whatever the case may be, they don't always get along, but they will go get their money. Mm-hmm.
Several years ago, I had I put out a album called Old Dog, New Tricks. And on the end of the album, I was talking about, you know, I think this was before they had tore down Cabrini Green in Chicago. And I was just looking at the different things that was going on. And one of the things that happened at around that time was a Jewish dude had killed another Jewish dude. And the community, I kept hearing, they were saying that the Jewish community is outraged because a Jew hadn't killed a Jew in 10 years. I don't know how true that is, but when I heard that, I'm like, what? We kill each other every day. But then if you present something like this to certain people in the Black community, the first thing they're probably going to say, oh, so what you want us to be Jews? You know, we ain't mean Jews or something. You see, this is what you get when you just mention something about another culture or something and say, hey, you know, that's a good thing that don't. Well, that's them. We ain't, you know, we ain't that. So that really bothered me. Like I said, damn. Well, you know, so, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Steve, some people are just afraid of change. When it comes to change, people are so used to the status quo, the thought of changing this, you know, like I said, with Hood Peace, the thought of being able to have your kids go to the park and not have to worry about them, that thought never crossed their mind. It don't cross their mind. They're so in protective mode of their kids, the thought of your kids being able to go out to the ice cream man and not get shot or sit in your living room and not have bullets flying through your house and not have helicopters and gunshots be, you know, being a part of your soundtrack every day. That some people just like that shit, man. And it's amazing. I've said the same thing, Steve. I said, I mean, we've been over here for a long time in America, and we're still behind everybody else. Although we spend trillions of dollars with everybody else. Mm-hmm. If we just learn to handle our money better, like the Jews, like the Latinos, we could be a different people, but people have to be willing to change. Everybody, every ant, got to be willing to make a move to get the ant hill moved. And that's what, you know, bees do the same thing. Bees, everybody gets a little bit of that nectar from the plants to feed the hive. But you can't be out here trying to watch everybody else build a hive so you can steal it. Mm-hmm. Okay, that don't make no sense. And that's why we had a problem that we have. And I said this before, man, we can learn a lot from the Jewish community, dude. They winning.
When we talking about economics, you know, and then part of this whole podcast has Rappers Over 30 has certain segments that's going to be ongoing. And one of them is a Willie Lynch moment. I would ask you to give a Willie Lynch moment. So I'm going to give you an example of what I'm talking about, because you just mentioned something about the economics and the Black people, how we spend our money. But it's apparent that we sometimes, a lot of us in the community, feel like another Black person's gain is our loss. So let me give you an example. I got a friend, right? You know, I'm into music, obviously. And he built the studio. You know, I went and helped him find the, you know, got good deals and get all this equipment or whatever, whatever. So one day he said, hey, Steve, can you take me to the Guitar Center? I'm like, sure, I'll take you to the Guitar Center. So when I take him up there, he brings out, you know, a couple of pieces of rack mount synths, and he's selling them to him, right? So one particular synth, the guy was going to give him $100. You know, this is a white guy working at the Guitar Center. So my friend, like, he about to take the $100. And I said, well, fuck it, I'll give you the $100 for it. And he was like, no, what you want it for? What you going to do with it? I'm like, what fucking difference do it make? You about to give it to this man. So like I said, some of us would rather give it to another race, because for some reason, and I'm his friend, I'm the one drove him there. I'm the one who did the research and found all of this stuff for him. But what is wrong with us, man? What? So to me, that's a Willie Lynch syndrome moment. That type of mentality, characteristic, and trait that some of us have, how can we identify it? And I associate it to Willie Lynch, because I just don't want to come right out and be like, you are, you know, calling him. So I put it to Willie Lynch. But how can we do that? Can we get people to understand that, you know, all of us might have a pet peeve, something about us that's screwed up. But if it's that Willie Lynch shit, that has to go, because until we get rid of that, the community is going to constantly be in turmoil.
You know what? I see the same. I had the same situation. A buddy of mine was setting something up back in the day on Craig. I'm not Craig. This the recycler. And I called him, and he recognized my voice. Oh, what's up, dude? How you doing, man? I mean, yeah, man. I see this thing. I want to do this. I said, how long are you going to be home? I said, I'll be here for a couple of hours. Okay, cool. I'm coming out and pick it up. Man, it's going to cost you $350.
Oh, my God.
What you mean it's going to cost me $350? Oh, man, yeah, you're going to cost you $350. Because you figure I'm going to do something with it that makes it better. But I got to tell you this other story, man. I had a white guy I used to sell records to, and he owed me $400. Another buddy of mine had a record store, and the brother owed the white boy $500. I called the white boy and said, hey, man, can I pick up my $400? He said, sure, come on by. He called right back and said, hey, man, tell you what, go by this guy's store. He owes me $500. Bring me, get the $400 from him. Bring me some more records and my other $100. Okay? So he called the guy and told the guy. Wait, here's the crazy part. The guy had already told him, hey, man, I got your $500. I'm going to bring it to you. He said, no, Lonzo going to come by the store and pick it up. Just give it to him. He's got to come this way anyway. Bring me some more product. Mm-hmm. And the dude all of a sudden didn't have the money. Oh, man, I ain't got the money. What you mean? You just called him and told me you was coming to get it. You was going to bring it to him. Well, I can't give it to you. Why not? And it was the most baffling situation I've ever experienced in my life. He had the money, going to give it to the white man, but he would not give it to me because part of the money was coming to me and it wasn't all going to the white man. And I know a few people like that, that no matter what happens, white man's ice is always colder, okay? And that's an old saying from back in the day, back in the 40s, before they had refrigerators and freezers. You had the ice man would come out to the house. You had an ice box. Mm-hmm. And the ice man would come out, and the black ice man would come out, and the white ice man would come out, and the white ice man would tell you, oh, man, it's white ice. It's colder than the black ice. Ice freezes at 32 degrees.
Okay? It's ice.
That's it. The white water don't make no difference. But some brothers still believe the white man's ice is colder. And I don't know how you fix it. I have no idea how you fix that one, dude.
Well, let me say this. What I'm going to do is I'm going to ask everybody, all of the viewers and listeners to the podcast, to log on to YouTube or wherever you can go, Google or whatever, and look up the Willie Lynch letters. You need to read it, listen to it, and try to apply it. I was shocked that my brother's older than me, you know, Whisper. Yeah. He didn't know anything about the Willie Lynch letters. I told him to read it. And my niece is 45. She didn't know anything. So with that said, Lonzo, I want to keep it moving. Rappers over 30, you know, like I said, it's part of what we're doing is, you know, I'm a rapper. Like I said, I'm 57. I've been doing this since I've been 13 years old. But what part of what I want to do is say, they say rap is a young man's game. I disagree with that. What do you think about that? And what can a rapper nowadays that's over 30 do to stay relevant, to handle his business, and to stay physically fit and healthy? What do you think on that whole
situation? You know, I think that's the biggest crock of shit anybody ever said, man. Rap, this new shit is a young man's business. Okay. Yeah, this new mumble rap, trap rap. You know, if you're 40 years old or 30 years old trying to be a trap rapper, you got problems, okay? But when I listen to old school, whether it's Tupac, Biggie, Nelly, whoever the case may be, there will always be a market for that, man. There will always be a market for that. And just like the Ozzy Brothers, they never go away, man. It's like Earth, Wind & Fire. They never go away. Their records are always being good. They'll always be good. They may not have the multi-million sellers they used to have, but because today's music don't require that much money, you can produce this music in a studio for little or nothing, man. So if you have any kind of musical skills or know somebody with musical skills, you can get the sound of the 80s, the 90s, whatever you want to have, and apply lyrics that have meaningful, apply meaningful lyrics to it so that you have some depth in your lyrics, man. I mean, you know, these lyrics, man, WAP, come on, man. WAP, WAP, come on, dude. I mean, you know, when you got, you know, I'm not being a hater, but I'm just saying, hey, man, that right there is not something I want my daughter or my granddaughter to be exposed to. and I understand songwriting, understand performing.
Are you going? Let me
explain this to you. Back in the day, when the Temptations, let's say Motown had various players it took to make a song. You had the Temptations that sang the song. You might had Norman Whitfield that wrote the song, and Gamble and Huff may have produced the song. Mm-hmm. Okay, you got somebody did the music, somebody did the lyrics, somebody did the singing. Okay, and everybody had a lane. Mm-hmm. Okay, everybody had a lane. So you got a writer who has life experience that working with a musician that has musical talent and has a great ear for orchestration and melodies and whatever the case may be. Then you got these young men who have the talent and the energy to pull it off and make it all come together. Hip hop, especially nowadays, hip hop has gotten to the point where everybody's supposed to be a one-stop shop. Mm-hmm. If you don't write your own lyrics or damn near make your own beats, you know, somebody may make your beats for you. You got to write your own lyrics. But if you're 22 years old, your education experience in life is limited. Mm-hmm. So taking that same example, if you are a 40-year-old man back in the 60s and 70s, you could write a song for young men who's coming up that record is still prevalent today because you had enough life experience to appreciate what you had gone through, but they have enough talent and experience to interpret it and make it palatable with the music that is timeless, okay? Mm-hmm. Today's productions, man, a 24 track would be a waste of fucking time. Mm-hmm. You got hi-hats, drums, maybe some little chords and some vocals, okay? It's not like a bunch of demos, but because you got all these special effects and other things going on with it, it gives it a fatter sound. But, you know, just going back to the stuff that Dre did back in the day, the orchestration and the horns and the bass lines and, you know, the background singers, the background vocals. Nobody takes time to produce anything these days. So when you hear this kind of stuff and you see what's going on, the new kids, I'll put it right here. Kids have been fed this so long. If you feed them something else, they will know how to digest it. You and I can appreciate horns and strings. We can appreciate melodies. These kids, now they may grow to appreciate it, because I know a lot of youngsters that love old school hip hop, R&B, whatever the case may be, because they've been exposed to it at a young age, so it's a part of their musical diet. Whereas it's like going back to your food. If all you've ever ate in your life was hot Cheetos, somebody give you a steak, you're gonna swear they're trying to poison your ass. Mm-hmm. Okay? You've been eating hot Cheetos for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Now somebody give you some vegetables and a steak for at a certain point in time, you don't know how to die. You don't know how to even deal with it, because you know how to cut it. You know how to put it in your mouth because you never dealt with it before. Same thing with music. You've been getting such basic shit with basic lyrics, because now the music has been, not, I don't want to say dumbed down, but it's been reduced to a certain age bracket. So if you're 22 years old, 21 years old, you're just now, in most cases, getting money for the first time. Any real money, you're getting some exposure, you're having sex, but now you're an artist. That's all you know. You don't know a whole lot. You never had no real issues. You never had your heart broke. You never had your house taken. You never had family members that just, you know, died after 30 years of knowing somebody. You don't know that kind of shit. So you limited on what you know.
Yeah, that's why the older rapper can still stand in that spot. Now, with me, I personally just got something in me that just won't let me quit. You know, at the same time, I struggled at a certain point in time where I want to stay relevant. I got tired at a certain point. People was telling me I sound old school in 89. You see what I'm saying? So when I was rapping then, so I pushed myself to try to, you know, because the point I'm making is I don't think an artist, an older rapper should still sound like it's 1980, even though that's still there. And I don't think, when I first did a song, I did a song with a, shout out Pimp Capone, Baton Rouge, but I did a song with Pimp Capone out of Baton Rouge back in 98. You know, he's a Southern rapper, and he provided the beats. But when I played it, you know, I'm from the Project Blowing the Good Life. When I played it for some of my peers, they didn't really like it. So it was changed. So I think to stay relevant, you, number one, I think you have to be open for change. You have to be innovative, and you have to try to consciously, you know, say, hey, I'm a step outside of the box. Some people don't want to do that. I know dope producers who made dope beats and they stop because they'll say, well, hey, that's not what's happening now. So that's when they quit. Some rappers do the same thing. Oh, trap rap is what's happening now. Don't let nobody, I'm telling the rappers, don't let no one stop you from doing what you're doing. Try to be creative. Try to come with something new. Don't try to, I hate when I see an old rapper and he's like you say, he's trying to walk around with these little skinny pants. He's 250 pounds, a backpack. And he's that's not a good look. You know, that's not a good look. I think you could take a little bit from what they do, put what you do and make it your own. So my thing, like I said, is to make these guys relevant. And the other thing is the health thing. What do you do with your health and what can you recommend? Because I know a lot of rappers who done got older, they've got diabetes, they got health issues, they're overweight. And part of what we want to do is tell these rappers, you're going to, if you tune into this thing, you're going to look better, you're going to feel better, and you're going to sound better. So health-wise, what do you do to stay healthy, and what can you recommend for a man or woman over 30 to start taking care of their health and being better physically?
I've always been, I ain't no health nut by no means. I still like my chocolate chip cookies. I don't drink sodas. I got a thing for iced tea. Mm-hmm. I don't eat pork. Ain't ate pork in decades. Will not eat pork. Me and my old lady, she like pork. I don't mess with that shit. I'm a turkey and chicken man, and sometimes I don't want no beef. Okay, I get up, walk my ass 3 to 4 miles every other day. I pick up some weights from time to time. If I feel sluggish, I'll take me some pills to have a good bowel movement. I take one pill a day for my blood pressure. I take vitamins every day. Okay. I take vitamins and supplements every day. I do my water. Don't do it like I'm supposed to. But again, man, you know, I don't have a perfect plan. It's just that I've been doing me for so long, and I've been motivated by the cats with diabetes, by the guys that's falling over in heart attacks. And I'm 63. Okay.
Looking good, bro.
Thank you, Doc. I'm 63, and I hang out with guys who are older than me that look like they younger than me. Mm-hmm. So that's my motivation, you know. And people have to understand, man. You can't hang around. I can't say this. If you hang around fat people, you're gonna be fat. If you hang around broke people, you're gonna be broke. Okay. You hang around dumb people, you may be the brightest one in your bunch, but trust me, y'all all dumb. Okay, so I hang around before the gym closed, dude. I was in the gym 3-4 times a week. And sometimes I might not do nothing but run on the treadmill for 45 minutes just to get my heart rate up. Go sit in the sauna for a while. Do me some, I like doing that, the battle ropes. So you got to do
that something. That this thing where you do like this?
Yeah, the battle ropes, yeah.
Yeah, I seen him doing it.
I got something. So, my son brought with him home yesterday. So, I sit in the jacuzzi and let all the toxins sweat out of my body. I just bought me same thing with the sauna. I bought me a portable sauna to sweat all the toxins out of my body, man. So I walk my neighborhood 3 or 4 times. My neighborhood is about a mile square, and I'll take a different route every other day to see some different part of my neighborhood, man. Put my headphones on and go walking, and I'm usually listening to old school shit. So, I mean, that's just me, man. And I can't tell nobody how to do them. But I do say, man, as you get older and you start getting that phone call, you hear about so-and-so, what? Anytime the phone rang and they say, hey, how you doing, man? Did you hear about?
Not
you
good news.
Some fucked up shit.
Not good news.
Okay? So, I ain't never got the call. You hear about so-and-so? What happened? He won the lottery. I ain't got that one yet. Okay? I get the heart attacks, you drop dead. I get all the other ones. So when you get, and I said, when you get my age, man, unfortunately, time catches up with everybody, you know, as you get older, and it was really makes you even more motivated. You look down and look back at guys that are younger than you that's having an issue. I was looking at my news feed today, and brother Dr. Dre from Ed Lover and Dr. Dre out of New York, he had to get one of his legs amputated.
Yeah, I saw that recently. Dr.
Other leg, it looked like it's about ready to go too.
Yeah, so what? You know, what
diabetes ain't no joke, man. And a lot of this shit is self-inflicted. If you get up off your ass and do some running, some kind of exercise instead of this shit right here, mm-hmm. you'd be surprised how your sugar levels will stay intact. You won't have to worry about diabetes. You don't have to worry about heart issues. I take one water pill a day, man. I piss like a racehorse. But
a water pill? What's a water pill?
Water pill is for your blood pressure. I had borderline high blood pressure 2 years ago. Every time I go to the doctor, my shit is perfect. But I still take the pill because he ain't took me off of the motherfucker. So I still take it. But I also take my supplements.
Well,
that's what I do.
I think one of the biggest things with that, because I've had some health issues myself, and I think one of the big things is just being able to say no. Like you mentioned earlier, the chocolate chip cookies. Man, I used to get them Famous Amos. I go in the store, and they had a bag about this big, and man, 2 days it's gone, and I'm looking stupid because I want a cookie, but I done ate a whole bag of cookies and one day, the cozy sack pudding and all of that. So one thing you guys got to do, you gotta fight the feeling, because it's for your life, you know, and if you got kids and you got people and you want to be here, so we want to get you guys to start, you know, eating some good food. Stop buying that pizza, that bullshit, you know. If you prep your food, prepare your food, try to cook your food, or find somebody that's going to do it for you. So, Lonzo, we're going to wrap it up in a minute, but I just got a couple of closing questions. Can you share a funny story about a job or a hobby that you had?
A funny story about a job or
a job or a hobby that you had? Like, what's a funny moment or funny story relating to a job or a hobby that you had? If not, just in general.
You know, well, first of all, I had a job since 1979. So that I can talk about the club, I can talk about DJing, but as far as the job, I ain't had one in 45 years, so it's gonna be real hard for me to have that conversation.
Give me a funny story with a celebrity then, like a really funny story that somebody, you know, that our listeners would like to hear about, like a fun something that you ain't shared with nobody else, because this is rappersover30.com, the podcast.
You know, I never forget one time I'm talking about your boy Dre. I sold him my RX-7. And he used to always get speeding tickets, and he kept speakers and pull out. That's when he had to pull out radios and shit.
The Alpines.
Somebody broke into the car and stole all the sounds. Okay. And so we at the Wilton Theater right there on Wilshire and Western, about to do a gig. And before we got into the gig good, somebody ran and said, "Hey, man, there's a guy out there in the RX-7 trying to steal the radio." So we run out back to the thing, and sure enough, this crackhead had just pulled Dre's radio out of his car. He got it tucked under his arm like a football. He headed for the gates, okay? They catch his ass. They bring him back to the car, and I'm looking, and something ain't right with the whole situation. I'm like, "Dude, where the glass at?" He break the glass. He left the window down or what? Dre, "Nah, man, when I got to the spot, I didn't have enough money to buy the window. I just bought the stereo." He bought the stereo. Didn't even bother to pull the motherfucker out. He bought the stereo and the speakers and didn't even think to take it out of the car. Crackhead. I said, "Y'all, I ain't gonna touch that dude, man. I ain't touching him. I ain't messing with him. If you do that, he deserves the radio." Okay.
All right, here's another one. Give me, what's the craziest dream you've ever had?
I dreamed that for some reason I had achieved Martin Luther King status. Okay? This is a true dream. I had done something that the nation had appreciated, and they was treating me like I was Martin Luther King on a positive tip. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't believe it, man. I couldn't believe that I was being respected in this manner. I get a lot of respect for my hip hop contribution, but this right here, this was a special dream for me, man. I couldn't tell you why they did what they did, but it was like I was meeting some dignitaries because I had done something that was really, really prolific and folks was appreciating it. And I was like, damn, my dream, I was proud of myself in my dream. So yeah, that was one of my craziest dreams, man. And you know, hopefully, you never know. With this hood peace movement, it could be something that it make the dream come true.
Well, you got my support, brother, in anything you do, because you're a great guy and we know that you're sincere. It ain't no bullshit behind it. Okay, when it comes to, you know, the music business and stuff, did you ever have a favorite piece of music equipment and why?
You know what? My favorite piece of music equipment was my keytar. And being in World Class Record Crew, you had the DJ, you had two rappers, and I wrote a lot of the songs, but I didn't have anything to do. Okay, I didn't have no instrument to play. I'm not gonna be the dancer. Okay, so I decided to buy me a keytar because everything we did was, I would have my little keytar like I'm playing my shit, and it was never plugged up. Mm-hmm. I didn't play shit. I just held this damn thing
like an air guitar.
And I remember one time, But one time I'm at Long Beach Convention Center, and on our records, World Class, there is a bass solo. And every time we played this record, I would go into mimic. I'm doing my shit, right? And this is before they had wireless shit. Mm-hmm. Okay? So I'm doing my thing, man, and I don't know what happened, but somebody stepped on my fake cord that I had plugged into the back of the thing. I'm playing my ass off. I'm doing my Milli Vanilli shit like a motherfucker, right? Mm-hmm. And some little white kid says, "Hey, mister, your cord's unplugged." Yeah. Fucked up my game, dude. Yeah, man.
It is. That's crazy.
I had a keytar back in the day. I bought another one a couple years ago. I sold it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was always my favorite instrument, man. Just to for showmanship, you know. Give you something to do. I mean, Elvis Presley carried a guitar forever. You ain't never heard Elvis do a guitar solo. Never.
It's show business. Hey, it's show business.
That was his thing, right? So
yeah, you got the moves.
I had my thing, man. My keytar gave me a chance to walk around the stage and look, you know, play like I'm doing my thing. I'm always been a fan of bass players. I had a bass guitar at first, but shit, we was on the road with so many bass players, they asked me to do a sound check. I couldn't play shit. So I said, fuck this, I'm not doing this no more, okay? Mm-hmm. So I went and got me a guitar.
What's your favorite food?
Poof, barbecue.
Barbecue. And okay, give me one in Los Angeles. Now before you answer this, let me say this. I used to tour around places to get food. I went to, I think it's Bledsoe's, ain't that in Compton? Phillips. What's the other one? Woody's.
What?
So I need a barbecue place now. What's your, you tell me barbecue, do you make it or do you got a location that you go to and get it?
I don't even cook, man. I've never been a big cook. My girls used to cook, so I never really got into cooking. My dad was a great cook. I could buy some barbecue like or something, but
Somebody go in Los Angeles or Compton or wherever? Where do they go if they're in LA County and they want some barbecue?
Bledsoe's is my favorite spot. Mm-hmm. They moved across town. They left Compton. They moved over to La Cienega and the Proud Birds. I had been over there. So Phillips has been my new spot. One over on Centenella. Okay, mm-hmm. I might go by there today.
I thought they shut down the Phillips. That shut that. So they got one on Centenella now.
Never the one by the Regency West is shut down. The one on Centenella is still open.
Yeah, that was my spot. Give me a Regency West story.
Oh man. back in the day, man, I first started playing gigs, man. And me and a partner of mine, Elston, was doing this party at the Regency West. And I met this girl, nice chick from Texas. I'm somewhere in Texas. And I liked her a lot, man. I mean, you know, just that, and just her vibe was so cool. She had a little country twang to her. She was real pretty, too. And went out to the van. We got to kissing and carrying on. And she told me she was going to cook me an armadillo.
Shit.
I bet you would like armadillo. Oh, yeah, I can make some great armadillo. I'm like, bitch, you just lost me. I need no goddamn armadillo.
Every time I see them, they laying on the road dead.
Man, armadillo's as dumb as hell, man. I tell you what, that something gun is hard as a rock, though. He hard as a brick.
Let me give you a story about the Carolina West. I'm not going to say no names, you know, because it's a serious story. I performed at the Carolina West one time, and Robin Harris was the host. So several things happened. My sisters, they're from New York and Baltimore. They're all of them in Baltimore right now. But my sister was there, and she done stabbed and shot a few people in the time, you know. So Robin Harris, he's cracking jokes on everybody. Now, mind you, I had took a camera there. That's when they had the big VHS cameras. And I'm filming everything in the car. Nobody said nothing to me. So he gets ready to bag. He's bagging on everybody. He bagged on Joe Jackson. Joe Jackson was in there that night. He clowned him. When he got to my sis, he said, "Nah, something wrong with you. I ain't messing." My sister done like this. So anyway, we do the show and everything, and he tells me, Robin Harris asked me, I had a song called Groovin' back then, you know, took the Lil Rascals. Matter of fact, Battle Cat had co-produced that song. And Robin Harris asked me, how much was I getting paid? I said, ain't paying me anything. He told me, never ever perform again unless you're getting paid. When I leave the club that night, you would know this guy. I'll tell you this guy's name off camera and everything. But when I leave the club that night, mind you, I filmed the whole event with the camera, or while I'm performing, my family's filming or whatever, I got the whole thing. When I leave, I had some dancers called the Bad Habits. And, you know, like I said, I've always been old in this rap game, but they were, you know, they were really young kids. And when I come out, the guy who had threw the event, he actually tells me I got to give him the tape. And I'm like, I'm not going to give you my tape. And he like, well, you wasn't supposed to be filming. And I was like, well, somebody should have said something while I was filming. Why you wait till I film the whole event and get out? Now you're trying to. So they actually pulled guns on us. So I told the guy, you know, I was older, but I still was young and dumb. And I told him, bro, I said, you pulling these guns on me in front of these kids. I said, why don't you, me and you, go over in that parking lot and handle this like some men, and, you know, and maybe you can get the tape, you know. So make a long story short, he didn't do that. I walked away with my tape, end up giving it to my boy. Who I get that tape to? Macadocious from Thug Life, my homeboy, that's my partner, and he lost the tape. So I had I filmed the whole show. This is Robin Harris. I got him doing the Baby Kids and everything. I gave the tape to my boy Macadocious, he lost the tape. But that's just a Regency West story. Let me hit you with
Harris, Robin Harris used to work Even After Dark every Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say I discovered Robin Harris, but I was there very supportive in this early part of his career. In fact, his wife, damn it, what's the name start with a Z? Zanetta. Yeah, Zanetta. He met her down at Jeffy. Robin Harris played upstairs at Eve After Dark. Zanetta played downstairs in Jeffy's, and that's where they met and fell in love and got married at.
Was that your club off of El Segundo down there? Is that the same location? Yeah, okay, same so place. That's the Eve After Dark. Because I knew it as the
upstairs. Jeffy's is downstairs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And Robin will call me up, and I know I need to make $20 to make my rounds. Come on, Robin. And nigga tells the same goddamn jokes every week. We was buddies, man. We was, in fact, a couple of years ago, his wife does a tribute for him every year at the Regency West. And she allowed me to speak on Robin's behalf. I never forget one night I was at the Regency West, and Robin was the host, and Sinbad came in. And, you know, Robin and Sinbad are some very quick-witted dudes, man. And Robin and Sinbad got into it joke-wise. And, dude, it was – you ever have laugh so hard, you can't breathe? It's like your chest hurt. You need some air. People were running out of the Regency West to get air because they could not breathe. These guys were coming at jokes so fast. They was hitting them so fast. You could have robbed the joint, man. You could have robbed the whole damn joint because everybody, okay?
That's a moment.
Everybody was knocked out. And then I remember another time at the Regency West, I just thought about that. Comedy Act Theater, my boy Michael Williams used to run this. And every Thursday, everybody would be at the Regency West. Eddie Murphy, the Wayans brothers, Martin. Nobody was shit, but all the comedians would be there. He was like the black comedy spot for the hood. And a lot of celebrities would be in the house. The Lakers always be there. Michael Cooper was always there. Magic was always there. Everybody was always there. And this one night, Tommy Hearns was there. And Robin Harris had this thing about him. You could not get up and go to the bathroom doing this.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to clown your ass, okay?
Oh, yeah.
So Tommy Hearns like, fuck him. I'm going to get up and go to the bathroom. So Tommy Hearns got up. Robin said, oh, you don't think I'll clown your big ass? Tommy Hearns like, man, get out of here with that shit. Robin said, don't make me call Sugar Ray. Ooh, Rob, Sugar Ray just don't make me call Sugar Ray. Man, dude, that shit was hilarious. You had to be there, man. That was one of the most craziest moments because you didn't know if the time he heard was going to whoop Robin's ass or fall out laughing. He fell out laughing, but boy, that shit was crazy as hell. That's a true Regency West story.
Lonzo, I got maybe three more, and then, you know, we can just fill it out from there, but what's your favorite place in the world outside of the United States and why? What's your favorite place? Like outside of US, United States, and why is it your favorite place?
Man, I enjoyed England when I was on to England. I had a ball in England. It was kind of wider than I liked it for it to be. I haven't been a whole lot of places like that I could say, man, I've been to, I'm looking to go on to, I want to go to Puerto Rico and I want to go to Dominican Republic, but I haven't been out, haven't been yet, but I got a new credit card. I might swipe that son of a bitch and go see some Dominican girls. Anyway, England was fun, dude. I had a ball in England. And I love Hawaii, too. I know it's still technically the United States, but I enjoyed Hawaii, too.
Mm-hmm. How about, 2020 been a tumultuous, did I pronounce that right? Year. What's going down in 2021? What do you think is in store for us in 2021?
Well, first of all, I don't want people to think that all of a sudden 2021 hits and everything go away. It ain't going to be like that. It's going to take a little more time for us to get through this shit right here. But I do believe we'll be on the downside of this pandemic and on the upside of getting our money back, right, getting our lives back together. We've been doing this almost a year now. So it's going to be, I think we're going to be on the uphill swing of getting back to normal. Whatever that may be, whether it be the new norm or a version of the old norm, I'm looking forward to it because I miss going to the movies on Fridays. I miss going to my Taco Tuesday on Tuesday. I miss going to the Melody Bar on Friday afternoons and hanging out with the folks, man. So, you know.
How about stepping? You miss stepping?
I miss stepping a little bit too, man. I'd go to the stepping events just for the social aspect of it, man, because I hang out with some cool grown folks. You know what I'm saying? Because steppers, they regular people, but they not like regular people. They own some different kind of stuff. They like to dress. They like to shoot the shit. And it's a big community of us, and we all know each other. And they're just fun people to hang out with.
Okay, I got two more. You kind of dabbled in this with your dream, and I had this question on here. And it was, do you have any interest in getting into politics? And like I said, because let me finish. And I'm saying that because I really believe if you do that, I'm going to be 100% behind you. And I think that we can get the hip hop community behind you because we got power and we have to start using our power. We got to start checking ourselves, eating right, killing this Willie Lynch bullshit and getting behind people like you. So do you have any interest at all in getting into politics?
I have been asked about politics in the past, and I kind of declined on it. I think I could be more influential on the outside for a politician as opposed to be under the same scrutiny. Because, see, I'm not politically correct, okay? I know that. I'd be apologizing all the time. I'd be on TV apologizing because I'd be saying something. So, and it used to be bullshitting myself and thinking I'm gonna change. I've been doing me for too long. But I can be influential and not be under the same spotlight. I got a lot of friends in politics. Some of my friends are senators and congressmen and city council people. So I got a lot of relationships in politics. And right now, if we speak, no, it's not something I'm looking to do. But like I said before, sometimes it's the kingmaker has more influence than the king.
Okay. just a question about a young man I had the pleasure to know, and I heard you mention him. That he had coronavirus. Kid Frost, how's he doing?
I don't know. I just heard the other day, man, he was dealing with this coronavirus. I hope he's all right. You know, Kid Frost had some heart issues a couple of years ago. He's diabetic. So it's really put him in a dangerous situation. I'm hoping he's strong enough to deal with it. I'm going to make a couple phone calls later today and see how he's coming along. But I think he's all right. I saw him on the Post about a week ago. So I'm hoping that he should be on the uphill swing of the situation and coming through it. But, you know, I just want to make sure, you know, before I speak on it.
All right. Well, prayers for Kid Frost. And I haven't spoke to him, and it's been a very, very long time. So in closing, once again, can you remind us of any products, services, books, what you got, where is that, how can people get it? And I'll definitely put it in this podcast. So what do you got for the people out here, Lonzo?
Check out my book, folks, NWA, Not Without Alonzo. It's on Amazon Books, or you can go to my website, lonzowilliams.com. I got world-class record crew memorabilia. Also, I got all my album covers on T-shirts now, so you can get one of those. The hood piece T-shirts, hood piece yard signs are now available at lyricalrevolution.org. They're $20 a piece. Check out my podcast, NWA Stories with Lonzo, on YouTube. And look for me. Oh, I forgot to tell you, man, I'm also the program director for the U.S. Weed Channel. U.S. Weed Channel is a television channel on Roku. And I've been working with them for the last past few months. We're going to do a soft launching in December with the main relaunching in January. And I've been signing a lot of different shows, man, so.
And that's the, can you say that again? Did you say U.S. Weed Channel?
U.S. Weed Channel. Okay. All our shows are not about weed. Our shows are, we have regular TV, it's a regular TV channel. It's just named after weed. And my man said, we're doing for weed what MTD did for music video. So we
talk about it. On Roku.
Yeah, on Roku. It's on Roku right now, but we're going to be on Pluto. We'll also be on Amazon Prime in a minute, but right now we're on Roku and Pluto.
Okay, so that's a wrap. I'm going to invite everybody, all of our targeted audience, or anybody who happens to tune into this. You just heard it yourself from the West Coast Godfather himself. Support the brother. Get behind him. And Lonzo, salute you, brother. Hats off. You're doing a great job. You continue to do it. You're passing it. You're real. And if you do decide to get into politics, you know, even if you're saying you're not politically correct, we all know ain't nobody perfect. And that might be the perfect person for the job. Lonzo Williams.
Y'all. Thank you, guys. Much love, Steve.
You got it, brother. Take care.
All right, now.
Thank you again for listening, everyone. Go to the show notes for links and more information about this episode. For more information on Lonzo, visit lonzowilliams.com. And be sure to pick up his paperback book, Not Without Alonzo, The History of West Coast Hip Hop. Don't forget, you can watch the video interview portion of this podcast on any smart device by subscribing to my streaming video on demand channel from rap2film.com. It's been fun. Join my email list, leave comments, spread the word, and tune in every Thursday at 6 p.m. for new episodes. Best of health, happiness, and success to you all. Happy holidays! Age is whatever you think it is. You're as old as you think you are. Muhammad Ali.